Hey, hey, hey.
Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today I have with me Eric.
Hello.
And Carl.
What's happening, people?
And today we're going to talk about, okay, Carl, what is Valerian and the what now?
Oh, shoot. See, you're gonna, is the land of 1,000 water pools. I don't know.
What was it called, Eric? It was
the city of 1,000 planets.
Thank you.
There you go.
Okay. So this was an interesting film in that I remember hearing about it, but I really wasn't pumped up about it until I heard about it the week before it came out. And it's like, oh, yeah, Eric and I are going to be in the same town. Let's go see it. And he was just like, no, I really want to see Dunkirk. And I was just like, dude, have you met me? I don't want to, you know, let's see something with some science fiction. I kind of wish I would have seen Dunkirk instead.
Uh-oh. Here we go. The truth leaks out immediately.
Okay, so so Valerian, and I'm just going to call it Valerian because I'm not remembering all of that other stuff, is by the, so when people said it was going to be like, what was the other
Fifth
one?
Element.
Fifth Element.
I thought that it was just going to be like that. I didn't know the same guy was going to be doing it. I didn't realize that. So when I saw it, my expectations, I don't know what my expectations for, but when I watched it, I was exhausted. I felt like there were so many things going on in this film. It looked really pretty, but I'm not sure, Eric, if I fell asleep during it, but I know that I rested my eyes because it was a lot. And I really didn't know what Carl thought. I didn't know if what I felt was in line with everyone else felt. I actually, Eric and I did not talk about the film afterwards, so I don't know what he thought. And so it's just what I felt like people were excited about this and people loved it and I didn't, and I feel weird. Somebody give me something.
Well, I mean, when I watched this, I will say the first 8-10 minutes of this movie has almost no English dialogue in it. I mean, you know, the aliens say something, but there's almost no dialogue, and it is visually stunning. I mean, you get to see an entire alien ecosphere. You get to see a culture. You get to see this nature and balance. And all of this is done visually with no words, it's all just the gestures and in seeing the alien world through the eyes of the alien. And it's a beautiful experience. Without the words, it is absolutely visually stunning. Immediately after that, we see this scene where Valerian and, you know, his girlfriend is about to jump on him in a bikini on the beach, and they start to speak. And the dialogue at that point is so jarring, not just because it's human speaking, but because it's that kind of forced dialogue. And it's like it's bringing you down from the high of all of the visuals and the spectacle that you saw. And then immediately you're slammed into this kind of stilted dialogue from 1973. You know, it's disconcerting. And it's the back and forth between the absolute stunning visuals, the amazing world that they build, and this paper thin dialogue that is what I found difficult about Valerian. So if you go with no sound, if you don't pay any attention to the dialogue, and you don't really try to make sense out of the plot or anything, and you just bathe in the amazing world that Bassan has created. And he really does some amazingly beautiful and interesting things. Then this is the movie for you. But if you try to follow a rational storyline, and it is a storyline there, but what's there is not really all of that.
I'm surprised at you, Carl. I thought maybe I was like overreacting or just being weird or tired or I was in a bad mood, but I'm surprised that maybe you didn't like the kind of absolute bat crap craziness of it. Like, what happened here? Is there something happened, or we haven't heard Eric's opinion yet? But I
not right, because yeah, because I was about to say it takes a really special person.
Okay, come on
to
now.
Watch what's going on.
We don't know
Valerian.
His opinion. He hasn't said his opinion
and say that this is a coherent masterpiece, and that we are crazy for saying this stuff. A very special person, Eric.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, a really unique perspective has got to come in, just swoop in from the perpendicular realm and say, you guys are crazy. This movie is great. Here's why, Eric.
No. This movie... Yeah, I don't know. It has problems. I was going to say serious problems, but I don't even, that's not even the right way to say it. It definitely has issues that are stumbling blocks to get over to fully enjoy the movie. And there's no real help to get over those blocks.
What? Are you telling me that you agree with us on this?
Oh my god.
Well, it's either you agree with me or you don't agree with me, but I always agree with me.
This is very unexpected. You're darn right about that. You are darn right about that. Frankly, I just think he's being contrary to his normal contrariness right now. That's all it is. Really all it is.
I always have the pulse of the people.
Here we go. All right.
Here we go.
Okay.
All right. Well, Eric, what did you think? You know, we gave our thumbnail. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean... My thumbnail is similar to yours. Luc Besson, a lot of his more recent movies, they're good ideas, and he's obviously a gifted and talented filmmaker, but they just keep missing the mark. Like a poor marksman, he just keeps missing the mark. And it's so weird because all the elements are there. It should pan out. It makes it more bizarre in your mind when you think that he's the guy who made Fifth Element, because you wonder, was he surrounded by a completely different creative team back then, or what is it? There's so much intrinsic magic in Fifth Element, and Valerian should be very similar, but it's not. And yeah, I have specific reasons why it's not.
All right. Well, you want to start, or shall we?
Well, first I'll address what you had already brought up, the stilted dialogue.
What in the world?
I took it as, I have seen this before in other movies.
What, and Lockout? Did you watch Lockout?
I didn't watch Lockout.
Be thankful.
I've seen it in other movies, not necessarily strictly sci-fi movies, but sci-fi movies, some. I believe it may be a case of foreign filmmaker making an English language movie, which is not his first language. And the dialogue comes off is like when you get the weirdly translated subtitles.
Yep.
I know what they're saying. I know what they mean, but you would never say it that way. Yep. And it's happened before. Alfonso Cuarón, people make fun, but criticize some of his movies in that way. I didn't even notice it in Gravity, but people said the same thing about Gravity, that the visuals were strong, but the script was weak. I know it's not even a dialogue heavy movie, but they felt it was that loss in translation. And that's how it comes off, and it's really jarring. I agree. The opening sequence as a standalone, it kind of starts like you're getting primed for something good, and you're getting really ready for, and you think there's just going to be, you know, another hour and 40 minutes of engaging, intriguing sights and wonderment. And there is some intriguing sights and wonderment, to be sure, but not in the way you think. And, you know, it reminds me, too, I know it's happened in some other recent movies, but because I saw it so recently, it's almost another case of, like, the recent Apes movies. Even if you haven't seen the most recent War of the Planet of the Apes, you could kind of say the same thing for Dawn, which was the second one. We get into this weird area of where CGI characters seem much more developed and believable than human characters in the same movie. And this has happened a lot. People said the same thing about Warcraft as well, that the CG characters were more believable in the way they acted and everything compared to the humans in the movie. And it's a weird trend. And, you know, this movie has an amazing teaser trailer. I was one of those people who was waiting for that, because unlike Kat, I heard about this movie ages and ages ago. And when I saw that first teaser, it's such a good trailer on its own. And the thing that jumps out at you, just even in the trailer, is the two leads. They don't even really have dialogue in the teaser, but you see them. And I just thought, wow, does Luc Besson have that thing that I have where sometimes you just see two people and you think, God, they look so super related that it's weird, but they're not really related in real life, but they just look so similar. And I thought that was going to be like something that had to do with the story or the plot. Like, I thought they were cast
as brother and sister or something like that.
To me, I don't know what you mean.
To me, they excessively look similar in the face to each other.
Not. They have different noses.
They don't really have different noses.
I'm looking at the movie poster. If you didn't know anything about the movie, you would just think that's like a brother and sister.
That's funny. I didn't put that together, but
that was intentional. Like, I thought, because I don't know, I didn't know anything about the original story going into it. I thought that was going to be an element of the plot. Like, isn't it weird? Isn't it curious that these two look so similar, but there's some big romantic thing going on? And even in the teaser, the first time in the movie theater, it shows like they're about to kiss, and you get a weird feeling because it looks like the male and female version of the same person is about to kiss, and it's and I thought that was all intentional. Like, there was going to be
some
Luke and Leia, but this takes it like a step further,
But not full Game of Thrones. We're not going that far, right?
There you go.
So I thought Luc Besson had in his mind, wow, these two actors are just born to play these roles. Like, I thought maybe that was like his thinking before I watched the movie. So I thought this is going to be part of the story. This is going to have significance. Seems to have none of that.
That is very funny.
It has nothing. So then, the fact that it has nothing to do with the story and the movie, as far as I can tell, then your next question is why then? Why cast these people in these roles? Now, I will say I kind of like Loreline, even though she kind of seemed cooler in her first act of like the two-act movie. But, I mean, it's weird because she is an actress. She's still more up and coming. Her only real big role was in Suicide Squad, but she did not have a good role in a good movie. So that was a bad place to start.
But you didn't like Suicide Squad?
That movie is extremely flawed, and no, it was not enjoyable. And her character, like, wasn't even... At least there, even though I didn't like that movie, there was other likable characters, but not her character, or her portrayal, her in the Suicide Squad. But in Valerian, I'm like, oh no, okay, I can believe this. She may have a career in the future in acting, and then it's confusing because she's an up and comer in acting, and yet I thought, oh, she's fair enough in Valerian. But then the other dude, he is somewhat more established as an actor at this point. He was in the movie. His breakout role was in Chronicle.
That's where I remember him from.
Yeah, that was a small film. But then he had a important role in The Amazing Spider-Man Part 2, and he had some other newer films that I haven't seen, like that one earlier this year. Whatever.
One with the tulips. Tulip Fever.
So yeah. And I haven't seen that movie, but in the movies I have seen him in, he seems pretty legitimate. Like, he's got some, you know, bona fides as an actor. And then what's going on in this movie? I mean, with him. Cause this is where it really got off the rails for me. Once we get past that stilted dialogue in the holodeck, so you're supposed to believe that his character is a Han Solo type, for lack of a better, or Peter Quill, whatever. He's supposed to be that archetype. Wow. Either miscast.
Oh my God! Really? Okay, so Eric, I'm gonna stop you. I'm gonna stop you right now. Okay, so I have to reveal that Carl and I had this discussion already. And we did an entire podcast, and we're going to release it because we really wanted to hear what you had to say. But you're saying like the exact same things we absolutely did not think you would say these things. This is insane.
No. Well, that's on you and you.
Yeah, because you're making sense for a change. You're speaking to the language we know. This is crazy.
This should be revealing to you guys in another way, because I'm making just as much sense right now as I always do.
That is totally not true.
85, 90.
We're not even going to acknowledge that. Bask in the novelty of this moment.
This feels amazing. This feels like my Eric is back.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Miscast.
Every 10 or 15% of the time, I do have an offbeat opinion on something, but I always include I always include a disclaimer that I get it. I'm coming at whatever it is from a unique perspective. But most of the time, no, things are just as they are. And,
miscast.
Yes. What's his name?
Dane
DeHaan. See, he's, in what I've seen him in, he usually plays that dark, brooding, emo, whatever type of character, like teen angst, as Carl likes to say. And for him to play Peter Quill, because that's basically what you're asking him to do as an actor, and not just his acting ability and his presence, not just his acting presence, but his physical presence as well. He's such a prepubescent guy playing Han Solo. You don't get Mark Hamill circa 1976 to play the Han Solo role. Like, you need someone, you know. A little older, a little bulkier, beard.
So you're saying he seemed a little young for the role.
It's confusing. Confusing.
I was trying to figure out too, Eric, like, he's supposed to be this highly attractive guy who gets Cara Levine, who is a real live model in real life, and he's supposed to be this lady killer? I don't get it at all. He's not, like...
I mean, he might physically kill women.
Right. But not like in the way that they wanted us to believe he killed women. And that's not saying anything bad about the actor. It just was.
Wow.
Like,
he's 31 in Earth what? Years. He's 31 years old.
I could have swore he was like 22 or something. And that's
I know.
An insult. That's the insult right there. But he's not sexy here in the way that they tried to make him sexy.
He got his start on stage as an understudy for Haley Joel Osment on Broadway.
That does not help with the gangster reputation. I'm just saying. That is not, I studied under Haley Joel Osment. Han Solo.
But I thought that these two leads were cast for specific reasons to fill whatever role they would play in the movie. And it's very, very confusing. It's very, very confusing. Because he should have been playing, instead of playing the lead, instead of playing Indy, he should have been playing Short Round, like the assistant, like sidekick character.
That would have worked.
It's really bizarre. And yes, that is a stumbling block. It was a bit much to bear
for the whole movie. For the whole movie, yes. You're looking for him to be the hero, the dashing hero, and he's got this dark, brooding, oddly young thing happening, and and you combine that with I'm gonna definitely back you up on the dialogue thing. Your observation of the fact that English was not the primary language might be part of this. That explains a lot. But the other thing is, Bassan has this habit of writing really macho guys. Like the vocabulary and the dialogue and the way they're supposed to carry themselves is this like 1970s macho-ness that his stylistically has come and gone, but he keeps putting them in. He keeps writing them in the movies. So to hear that kind of persona coming out of this 20-something looking kid, and he's still supposed to be a lady killer, and he's still supposed to be dashing in the hero, it is really confusing, and there's no way that you can track, what your impression of the lead is supposed to be, because it's going all of these different directions. It's really disconcerting.
Let me tell you, Carl, the funniest thing about this film is like this, and Eric, this was a 2-hour-and-11-minute film, by the way, and I think around hour two, Eric let out a, oh dear. Oh my God. I was just like, now he's saying, oh dear. I felt like they were just throwing so much crap at the screen. Like, it was fun at first. And I was like, I see the Fifth Element, but I got tired after a while because it was just so much. And I felt like he tolerated it longer.
Do you happen to remember what part of the movie that was?
I forgot. I know. I was just really tired. It was after Rihanna at some point. And
lot. Rihanna did me no favors, by the way. Clive Owen did me no favors. Ethan Hawke did me no favors.
I like most of them more than the leads.
I enjoyed Rihanna. It was fun.
I mean, I get it. Clive Owen was chewing up his dialogue and his scenes. That's what he's supposed to do, I guess. So it's not like he was going the wrong direction. It's just the right direction was the wrong direction. No, I didn't like Rihanna's scene. Or, I mean, if it was just a standalone vignette, then I guess it was a neat visual to watch. But in the context of the movie,
why? Yeah.
It was just another, like, what is this even doing here? Like, in my opinion, like, her guest role in Battleship made a heck of a lot more sense and was a lot more necessary. No, I'm being honest.
I know.
It was a lot more necessary to the movie and not just like a... Well, I mean, it was, but not... But it didn't feel so much like a cameo stunt, even though it was. It fit the movie. This could only feel like a cameo stunt.
Well, technically, she was just a costume. She was actually a costume. That was her role.
That's true. Yeah. She was just like a skin, like a video game skin.
Yeah, yes, that is true.
That and her character was not helpful. I don't mean helpful to the story, but I mean helpful to the movie. Like, it didn't. She wasn't a BB-8 where you go, man, he was cool. Man, did he add something? No. It was this weird, almost as if when Luc Besson was asking for funding to make the movie, and it almost as if someone told him, like, as part of the contract, you need to insert Rihanna in this movie, even though you don't want to. You just need to. You have to in order to do this movie. And it's like he said, oh, right. Well, I guess I'll create this odd scene. And, you know, who better to play a pimp but Ethan Hawke? I mean,
I like the film. I like that too. But see, here's the thing. You know, Kat and I touched on it before, but there are crazy moments in the movie. Just a little moment. They don't seem to be strung together in any rational kind of way, but there are these separate kind of moments. The moments are interesting. But they don't really advance the core of the movie or anything. It is just him creating these artistic vignettes, and hopefully a movie strings them together. I found the moments interesting. It's just that they didn't have any emotional impact. They didn't lead to a story. They didn't connect in any way. They were just these interesting kind of moments. So if you look at the moments, I like the scene with Ethan Hawke and the pimp. I like the scene with Rihanna. I like the scene where we see him chasing through the station in his super suit that doesn't do anything else for the entire rest of the movie. But the moments, you know, are really, really, really interesting, but not in a traditional movie sort of advancing a plot or story kind of way. They are like looking at separate posters of art in a gallery and just appreciating them as they are. And
that is true. I completely agree with that. And there were some nice things. I like the concept of the Hollow Bazaar.
Awesome.
Yep. It was really cool. But I thought they were going to, this is actually why I want to rewatch the movie. Not because I really enjoyed it, but just because I want to understand how some different things work. Because I'm assuming that I will find details upon rewatching. Oh, that's why this works like this and that works like that.
What if you watch it and it doesn't string together?
I don't know, but I know people put a lot of thought into working some of these things out. The science of the movie. Because I thought when he was in the bazaar, like, how does it work? No, I know. You see, like, an augmented reality. I know how augmented reality works. But it's like there was beings who only existed in the augmented reality and weren't actually physically there. They were, like, part of the program, so to speak. And I was wondering, how did those hollow beings, how did they pose a threat? How did they harm him? You know, like, in Matrix, we understand, like, if you think of being in the Matrix as like being in a dream, and if you die in a dream or get hurt, you get hurt in real life. We get it because your spinal column is hooked and you think it's real and blah, blah, blah.
So how does
like playing a VR video game where you're not literally hooked in, how does that kill you? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, my impression of the world of the bazaar is what you are seeing were not hollow people. They are people from multiple worlds converging in a shared environment. So there's no virtual people. They're just people on other planets.
Okay, so you're saying it's their avatars that he's seeing, like the gangsters and whatnot. They're avatars of some real being somewhere else. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you could say, yeah. I mean, the quick answer is yes. I guess avatar is the right term we're using because everybody in the shared environment is a projection of themselves there. So, all right, yeah, so it's an avatar of them there. But they're very advanced avatars that are mapped to where they are. The other thing is like transporters, the boxes are matter transporters.
So the only way that you're able to move material from one world to the other world, even though it is a shared visual reality, is the boxes or the transporters that move the device, that move the product from one world to another in order to get the trading, the trading done. So, you know, that's what's going on. But I expected the Matrix plug-in to be the same. In other words, if somebody shoots you in the shared environment, it's just like if you got shot in the Matrix, that, you know, you got the mental connection and then you still die.
So Carl caught some things that I completely missed, which would have helped me. Because once we got the setup initially when they go into the bazaar, I was already anticipating in my mind, picturing a cool scene where, because I thought all the beings were there in the desert together, just in the augmented reality. So I was anticipating in my head, seeing a cool scene where he is being chased by two thugs and they're like jumping through the streets and going through everywhere. But then we'd see, like, this is what it looks like in real life. It's just him and two guys running in the desert. You know what I'm saying? Looking like crazy people.
That did happen. It's just you didn't see the people who were chasing him. That did
Right. Exactly. So we only get to see half of the story, so to speak, in reality. Yeah. But you helped me out, because I thought they were just like made up avatar people. I mean, not avatars, but I mean just solely in-game, existing in a computer. Yeah, yeah, exactly. In-game. NPCs. No. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
It was my impression that just, you know, so we're on, you know, human desert world, but there was, you know, like aquatic sea uh-huh. world, and they were all world, converge right. in a shared space, okay, but they were all people.
That's kind of cool. I mean,
conceptually, I thought it was a really good, it was a cool idea. And the fun part, I mean, this is where Bassan, when he's doing it right, things get interesting, because we are learning the rules of this crazy world while we're watching it. And that is a very, you know, relatively alien concept, the idea of that shared bizarre world and the trading and the moving the stuff back and forth. I thought that was a really cool idea. But the problem is you have brooding Han Solo kid and his lover's sister running around. And it just saps all of the wonder out of it when you keep coming back to that as the core. And
And then another vignette-y-ish sequence I really like is the very beginning, which was like the ode to Star Trek Enterprise. That was another scene that really got me hooked in from the start. I felt like, oh, this is going somewhere. Like, there's going to be a lot of meaning in this story. And obviously, there was this whole Babylon 5 thing going on, or Deep Space Nine, and all these, you know, disparate space cultures coming together. Like, it started off being like a United Nations type thing, Earth.
Yeah.
And then it turned into, like, you know, this is a larger, you know, galactic situation, and so it made me think, like, oh, this is going to be a grand tale, like telling something about humanity in the future, but talking about us today, and blah, blah, blah. It's like watching the preamble to a different movie, not this movie.
The only touch back to that we see. The only one that we see is it just so happens that the Pearl beings, the Pearl aliens, inhabited the first space probe that was the core of the whole station. Remember their getaway? That's what they were in when it was the same initial probe that joined in space with the Russians, that built the station way in the core of that whole system. This station was what the initial probe was that humanity had made.
Wow.
Oh, I was confused by that, because what I thought had happened was I thought the events of the CGI planet, I thought that happened, right? And, you know, their planet got decimated, and then they escaped their planet. And then I thought they pulled a Han Solo in Empire Strikes Back, where he kind of, like, to get away from the enemy, he hides by attaching himself to the Star Destroyer. I thought they escaped their planet, and they thought, where's, like, the one place we can be safe? And I thought somehow they inserted themselves into, like, the middle of this mega station because that was just going to be a cool place to hide. I don't know. I'm not saying that was ever pointed out in the movie. It's just that's what my brain came up with to like try to explain things I didn't understand.
Oh no, no, it might have. Okay, because so here's the thing. I'm going to explain because yes, there's a disconnect, and I don't know how to resolve it. So here it is. When the alien ship crashed on, you know, the battle that destroyed the Pearl's planet, or the society on the Pearl's planet, when that happened, the debris from the wrecked ship lands on their planet. Remember, they run in, some of the survivors of the Pearl, run and hide in that piece of crashed debris that's on the planet.
Right.
And then and then there's the mega explosion that wipes everybody out. Well, see, they're still locked in the piece of space debris, which is like, it's like an old shuttle or an escape pad. Right, okay. So in that is where they, you know, they learn about technology and they evolve their society and they finally, you know, they make their way back to the station in that beat up junk piece of debris. And yes, Eric, then they get back to the station. Somehow they get their way in there. This is the disconnect. But at the end, when they're ready to depart, you see them in the hangar next to the original probe. The probe is not the same thing that they got in or that they learned the technology, but that is what they used to leave. So I don't know what the connection is there. It would have made more sense
I misunderstood you the first time you explained it, but it makes more sense now.
I still don't know
how it all fits together. But.
Even those things don't fit together.
Well, Carl, it seems like you actually paid attention because these things, I was just, I didn't get it. I was tired by that point.
Well, see, I was desperately hanging on to things because this is how I watch good sci-fi. What happens is with good sci-fi, the loose ends, the threads, the little details like that snap back together in the end to make a mosaic that makes sense most of the time when you watch good sci-fi, it seems all disparate and these loose pieces, and you're like, what does that have to do with anything? That doesn't mean anything, but you have to remember them because in good sci-fi, all of those little pieces come back together in the end and they have meaning and they create a crescendo and a fulfilling end. Normally, with good sci-fi, that's how. So if you're a good sci-fi watcher, you know, Eric, we've done this all the time. You and I go back and forth about this, but you know, you pay attention to those details and you hang that stuff on, and those details are meaningful, and it's those little details that hit where the story is going to go. If it's good, if it's not. Then it's just these loose pieces of crap that never resolve, never come back. And that's what pisses me off. That's when because I'm paying attention. I'm watching these details. I'm holding all of this stuff in my mind. And then it's like, and then they kiss and it's over. What the hell? How is this a movie?
You know, I'm having more thoughts now because I'm thinking about, like, I'm just, like, thinking about this whole topic and my mind's expanding further outward. Uh-oh. I had two thoughts on the same topic about trying to like decode this, but the same piggybacking on what I said about the language lost in translation. I think it's that, but it's even more than that. Because my first thought I had just now was, because me and Kat were kind of talking about this earlier, but not about this, but it reminded me of this, which is, because we're talking about Black Panther or something. And I was saying, no, it's probably going to be an okay movie, Black Panther, because Disney Corp is they have these crazy quality control standards for their tentpole Marvel movies and their now Star Wars movies, where they want to make them failure proof. You know, if they feel like something's going wrong, whether it's Ant-Man or Rogue One or whatever, like they will just pull the plug, redo, reset. Same thing, I guess, with the Han Solo movie in production. And it's because they're like, no, we cannot fail. We cannot gamble with these things. And that's just how Disney rolls. And, you know, some people don't like that. Some people, whatever. That's whatever. So I was going to say this movie, could have still been with Luc Besson and still had the same cast and still had, I mean, they had ILM doing the special effects, everything else. Like, there's probably a super awesome movie. And if it had gone through the Disney process, it probably would be, you know, they'd trim the fat, they'd streamline it. It'd probably be a pretty cool movie if it had that kind of oversight. And I know it's funny because oversight's usually a bad word, like in movie making.
But here it could have been used. You know what? Yes. In Fifth Element, though, Eric, he had a co-writer for the screenplay. So here in Valerian, he did not. He really could have used one.
People say the same thing about Lucas with his original trilogy, that his ex-wife helped him pen those scripts, and then she was his ex-wife when he did like the prequels, and people say that's one of the reasons why that is the way it is. I don't know. But then I had a second thought after my first thought just now, which is, piggybacking on my idea of Lost in Translation, I used to watch a lot of foreign films, Asian and European foreign films. I used to watch many, many. And, okay, this is going to sound racist, but it's not racist.
Sorry in advance.
Always a good wind-up, yes?
No, but I would watch a lot of, like, Hong Kong, you know, gun action movies and those types of things, and Japanese ones as well. And then I'd watch a lot of, because the European ones are usually, like, indie romances with a twist, like a supernatural twist or something. And whenever I'd be watching these foreign films, for some reason, this is the racist part, like, you just give them a pass, like, on certain things. Like, when the script takes weird turns or, like, weird, like I don't know, like, a guy seems to defy gravity or something, you know, which doesn't seem like it's in the context of the movie because it's not a kung fu movie, but yet somehow he can do weird superhero abilities. And for some reason, when you watch some of these foreign movies, you just give it a pass.
It's a cultural thing.
It's what they do. I mean, it's like, ignore it. And then you're still able to fully enjoy the movie because there's crazy action sequences or gunplay, or you're just like, I'm in the spirit of the movie, dismiss. And that's just the way it is. And so then thinking back now to all those foreign movies I used to watch, this is just like that. Maybe he was like, you know what, screw this. I mean, yes, we wanted it to be in English and for English-speaking countries to get in on this because that's like the mainstream language, so to speak, of the world. I'm just saying. But at the same time, he's like, but we're going to do this the European way. You know what I mean? We're going to make a movie for us that just happens to be in English to make it more accessible. And so we know Americans do movies their way of making things realistic. I see this sounds so like anti-racist.
You know what? Actually, no. Carl and I said something like this.
Bollywood movies, same thing. Bollywood movies, which I also enjoy, they're enjoyable, but there's things that defy the rules.
But you know going in, though.
Yeah. You know, like, going in. Be ready for musical interlude. No matter what kind of movie it is, just
and
be ready
gonna
for
be
the musical
there,
interlude.
And it's going to be there. But the thing is, Eric, I feel like Carl and I kind of got this because we kept trying to figure out a way that this is good and we just don't understand it. So we were to me, Carl, answers a question. The question that we had, like, what is it that we're missing? And maybe it was that perspective.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about it too, because at the beginning of I've been watching a lot of anime recently. I mean, very recently, like sampling first episodes of many different things. And I'm reminded of all the tropes that you get all the time in anime, which is you get this extremely youthful, sort of broody, but lead hero character who is like well beyond his skill level and intelligence, and it doesn't make any sense that he's the hero of the day because he's so young and whatever. And that's what, when Carl was describing Valerian, I was just thinking about the animes I've just been watching the last few days. I'm like, dude, he's just like those characters, like completely unbelievable. But I watch those animes and I just go, oh yeah, well, I don't try to make it real. I just go, that's just how they do it.
But is that enjoyable to you? Is it overwhelming in this instance like Valerian? I mean,
I guess it's confusing in Valerian because, see, it would have been different if they said this is like the new breakout French science fiction spectacular. And then, like, if the movie poster was written, like, with, like, French, like, captions, or if the movie itself was actually captioned and not in English, I think we'd all be giving it many more passes. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Couldn't you imagine that? Like, and it would be playing at, like, you know, the art house cinema in your city, and you'd be like, oh, let's check out that French science. You know what I mean? I think people would give it, like, a much more of a pass. And I think, for lack of a better stereotype, I'll just say, like, the hipster types would all be talking about, oh, did you see Valerian? Oh, yeah. And it's cool because it's, like, you know,
sub-pop. It's a foreign film, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, like, mainstream, they don't get it. But we get it because, you know, we're so enlightened. Like, we get, like, they're doing their thing. Like, they're not doing Star Wars. They're doing.
Can I back you up right now? I'm reading from Wikipedia. It says, it has been called both the best and worst summer films of all time. This film was a financial success, earning more than $263 million at the box office and on a $90 million budget. At the time of its release, it was the most expensive European film ever made, and it remained the highest grossing French film at the international box office.
What those numbers you get, what unit of measurement were they in?
What movie was this?
This is, oh, I'm sorry. This is Fifth Element.
Shit. Okay, yeah. I was about to say that something was horribly wrong.
Okay, sorry.
See, our Spidey sense went off immediately. I was like, what?
I'm sorry. It had a budget of $197 million, which is, it had a budget of $210 million, and it made $63 million box office.
That's, I was trying to check. Is that the domestic or the worldwide?
Wikipedia, which I'm sorry for that other one, because I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. That makes more. Okay, fine. No, I don't know what we're talking about now. I'm just going to go on.
But I think if you see, it would get, if it was in French and spoken in French, and these were French actors and actresses, I think a lot of movie snobs would be giving it a lot of passes, which again comes off as weirdly like racist, not racist. But you know what I'm saying? It's weird that I think we would give a double standard.
I get it. Yeah, I know. I agree with that. I agree with that because you'd be more willing to accept the oddness of it and say, oh, it's just a cultural thing. It's just a cultural thing. So he's 12, but acts like he's 70. It's all right. It's all right. What's amazing is the visuals, and we haven't seen anything like that before. So I get it. Yeah. Yeah.
That was foreign and domestic. So domestic, yes. It only made $34 million.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it was yeah, a massive bomb in those terms.
Oh boy, that's rough. So, no sequel to Valerian.
Good, cuz.
I mean, that's going to take a while to dig out of that hole.
Yeah, but you know, it's
I wanted to like it, but it was just too much.
Another movie that did equally as bad, but don't you think, or I think it's much better. Like, I still feel bad about John Carter.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. The movie.
Yeah.
But people say that, like, you could swap the reviews and people kind of feel the same way, or critics, whoever, feel the same way as John Carter as they do Valerian. But I think it's two totally different situations.
I don't get how that doesn't apply to me. To me,
they said the same thing. Like, they didn't like the lead actor. They didn't feel he was convincing in the role.
What? And, he was perfect.
It wasn't perfect, but it was nothing wrong with him.
I loved him. I liked what he did.
On paper, when I say on paper, I mean seeing the final movie, those movies are sort of similar, but yet John Carter is good. And I mean, results-wise, they look the same on paper is what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. But in reality, one is a pretty decent, cool, watchable movie. The other is just more confusing. Than it needs to be.
Yeah. Well, it would make a great effects reel.
Oh, the teaser trailer is still one of the best teaser trailers I've ever seen. Because I do, you know, in my head, keep track of those trailers that blew me away.
I didn't see it, so I have.
I saw it many times.
I saw the teaser trailer, and I've noticed when there is not a lot of dialogue in the teaser trailer, I am immediately concerned. That's the thing. I don't care how spectacular the visuals are. If nobody says anything, if there's not even a one-liner sprinkled in there, I become concerned. I'm like, because it's telling me that, honestly, you don't care about the people in the movie. That's kind of how I read it now. And unfortunately, I have been validated on numerous occasions regarding that. No matter how good it is, I'll see it and I'll think back to my own rule. I'm like, oh crap, nobody said anything. No. And then I'll go see the movie and I'm like, I see why no one said anything in the trailer now.
Oh my god. So Eric, do you think that this will be like one of those films that, because this is something I wondered with Carl too, that maybe because we first saw it just now, it was a shock, but maybe in like a year or two we'll watch it again and like, oh my god, this was really good and da 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 da.
I don't think I'll ever think oh, this is really good, I just missed it. But having said that, I could imagine this movie gaining like a cult status going forward down the road. I really like people who didn't pay it any mind when it came out and just, you know, NA. Yeah, I kind of feel like this could get rediscovered 5-10 years from now and it'll be like this great cult classic, and you know, like Troll 2, and I mean, oh, Troll 2 is far worse. No, but I'm saying, but like Troll 2, when they have like these special viewings, like at the Draft House, and everyone shows up, and everyone's into it, and gets drunk, and just enjoys it. I could see Valerian having a second life.
So that's like, that happens?
Well, it does happen. Oh, it absolutely happens.
For Troll 2?
Well, yeah, and other stuff. But
or what's that movie?
The Room?
Oh my gosh. Star Crash.
Oh, what? I haven't seen that.
Oh, come on, Carl. I mean, I can understand Kat hasn't heard of Star Crash, but Carl, you haven't heard, you aren't aware of Star Crash?
No, I don't know this one.
Star Crash is the Italian knockoff of the original Star Wars that was made in like 79 or something.
Star Crash!
And it's incredible. It's incredible. And see, this is what I'm talking about. It has this crazy cult status. You have to see it to believe it.
Okay, let's see. All right, I'm
looking. Oh my god! Look at the Google.
I'm looking at that. But here's the thing. The one that I have seen is Battle Beyond the Stars.
Oh, I know.
That's got the cult that you're talking about. But this is even more.
This is more fits in line with what we're talking about with Valerian, because this was an Italian production trying to mimic Star Wars. But what makes it even more interesting is that he's not a major role in the movie, but it's very significant that David Hasselhoff is one of his very, very first starring roles.
He's in Star Crash?
Yes.
Really?
Like his hair.
Yeah.
He's not the main character. But if you Google, you'll see him as like a side character.
Oh, I see him in the back. Yes, he's next to the lightsaber guy.
I have to spoil it for you, but see, I bought this Blu-ray 6 years ago. Only having seen the trailer, but not really knowing much about it. So David Hasselhoff doesn't show up until like the last quarter of the film. I had no idea he was in the movie. You know how exciting it was to just be watching it, and all of a sudden, young David Hasselhoff, all of a sudden, like, the movie went from like a C minus to like a B plus, like when
guess what, Carl? MST3K did it.
But
what I'm saying is Star Crash, 20 years ago, no one heard of it. No one knew what it was. Huh? Like, you know, just question. But 2017, it has this new, like, revived, like, cult status. and it has had, like, special viewings, like, in theaters nowadays. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I could see, like, Valerian having, like, Star Crash notoriety. Yeah.
I guess.
You gotta see Star Crash.
You know what?
I will.
And guess what? We're going to do it on this show.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh,
no. Yes, Carl. Yes.
I mean, it's so 70s. It's so disco, but then it's European, but it's got English-speaking actors.
That's going to be glorious.
Something else. There's a guy, one of the henchmen from the original Godfather movies plays like a Darth Vader-like character. Like, how crazy. Like, a guy from The Godfather, an actor, plays like a Darth Vader. It's nuts.
So, Eric has to go.
All right.
Yeah. All right. And we're going to let him go. So, what I really want to get out of you, Eric, is a final thought before you go.
Well, I kind of feel like the last 5 minutes were my final thought.
Okay, cool.
I don't know. It was just so disappointing. Because, I mean, even, like, the movie Lucy by Luc Besson is like, kind of a cool movie, but you want to like it more. And it's like, a movie that's so close to hitting the mark, but it doesn't. But it's not bad. But you wish you could recommend it to more people, but you don't really want to. And I really thought that this movie was going to turn that trend around completely for Besson. And it just doubled down. It doubled down on confusion, which that's confusion on top of confusion. It's, man, oh, I don't know. I don't know. But, I mean, I didn't hate myself for watching it. And I will watch it, and I'm probably going to buy it down the road.
Oh, my God.
Like, no, it's because it's something still to look back at and, like I said, like, work out the details and go, oh, what I, you know, like, sometimes they people do YouTube videos or Crack does YouTube videos on, like, here's this misunderstood movie that you thought was crap from 10 years ago, but we're going to explain to you, like, all that you needed to know was already in the movie, but you just missed it.
They're going to have to work hard.
People do these retrospective videos where they're going to explain, like, you see, the reason this happened is this, and you didn't notice that the latch was undone on the door, which led to the thing escaping, and no, these weird E.T. aliens aren't like the crows in Dumbo. They're actually something different.
Wow.
They're actually much more interesting than that, and
this is going to take a whole lot of explaining, Lucy. This is going to take a whole lot of explaining.
Carl, final thoughts.
It should have been so much better. If you don't, if you're willing to ignore any sort of plot, it is visually stunning. It is truly, truly visually stunning. But don't go in there expecting coherence or a reasonable storyline.
Yeah, I want to say one more thing. Add to my final thought. My final thought is, what I was talking about with the foreign movie thing and how they just do things different. Another thing you notice in many of these movies, even the remake of Karate Kid, which the newer Karate Kid with Jackie Chan, that's another example of a movie that's an English language made for American audiences, but it was done the Asian way or the foreign way. Because when I watched that movie,
I cried. I liked it.
I remember thinking, because I've watched a lot of Chinese movies, this is like a Chinese movie, but it's in English. And there's like Will Smith's kid. But what I mean by why it's like a Chinese movie, because what I notice in Chinese movies and other foreign movies, like, you know how when you watch a regular movie, they have like the deleted scenes, and then you get the DVD and you watch the deleted scenes and you go, okay, those scenes had some info, but you get why they were cut, because, like, oh, that slows down that part of the movie, or that was unnecessary, or that was redundant.
Right.
When I watch Chinese movies and other foreign movies, it seems like they leave all those deleted scenes in the movie. And, like, if you go back, I don't know if you guys have seen the new Karate Kid, but it feels like the movie is overbloated, and there's, like, all these side subplots that you're just like, okay, but we don't need that. You should have just cut that, you know, because the movie's so long as it is, and that was, like, unnecessary. I feel like someone could do, like, a machete edit cut of Valerian, and that's, and I, no, and trim it down to, like, an 88-minute movie, and I bet you would be far, far better.
No, the problem is it would take all the leads out. That's the problem.
Well, maybe that's what needs to be taken out.
Oh,
yeah. But anyway, that's all I want to say, because I forgot, that's a good example of a foreign film in, like, American clothing, is The Karate Kid with Jackie Chan.
Okay, y'all. Okay, we're going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. Get us on Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, Stitcher Radio. We're also, have a website that you can comment on, scifipartyline.com. Voicemail, 773-336-2686.
Like us on Facebook.
That's right, and hit our discussion group. And that is a bye.
Bye.